My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons, part of the Soundstone Network. I am back with a new episode, and this episode is a hot one. It is a hot take question with Nick McConnell from Instruction Derby. This one was great. We were in a private conversation, and he shared a thought and opinion, and I instantly jumped on him and was like, wait a minute, before I discuss any further, let's have this be an episode. So he has a great hot take, and we had a great conversation. It's always fun talking with Nick. I am super lucky to have a lot of the guests that I get on this show. It's just great to have these different conversations and hear different people's thoughts and loves and opinions and shares, and I'm having a great time recording this. So I hope you all are enjoying listening to it. That's a good segue into liking and subscribing and rating and reviewing, whatever it is you're listening to it on. If you can give it a thumbs up or a 5-star if you like it, a little written review or a shout out or something like that would be rad. Whatever you got, I would appreciate it. That goes a long way. It's I don't know, it actually doesn't go really a long way at all. It doesn't really do anything other than helps give me some feedback and know if what I'm doing is enjoyable for you all. I mean, I'm primarily doing it for me because I'm having fun, but I mean, it's just great to kind of be re-motivated to continue to do it if other folks are having fun along the way as well, too. So I appreciate you if you do like and subscribe and comment and review and whatever that jazz is. After the break, you can jump into the conversation with Nick, but for now, I've got some business as usual. This episode will come out, and the Kickstarters are all done for the revival of the Beat 'Em Up Volume 1, but also that next batch of retro game zines. Those are both quick, 1-week, fast and furious campaigns to kind of start the month that needed to happen to make sure that those productions and schedules were all on. And as of right now, technically the retro game zine is funding currently as I'm recording this, but by the time you hear this, it'll be over. But it's already past its funding goal, so more issues. I'm going to have essentially a whole year's worth already done here soon, and that's kind of wild, this little side project. So I'm super proud of that. The collaborators I've had on those issues in the last few months have been like super awesome as well. Check those things out, patreon.com/DarrenHupke/shop. You can buy them digitally, or at pixelsandpolygons.net you can buy them physically. The Beat 'Em Up book should also be in production at this point, like being printed and getting ready to be shipped to me. That is like an August, September-ish time frame. I should have it in August and shipping it then, but I think I put in September as like the estimated shipping from the Kickstarter. So most people should hopefully be getting that earlier than they expect. And then I'll have those with me to promote at the Long Island Retro Gaming Expo. I'll be a guest there, which is still super rad and super cool. I'm looking forward to whatever's going to happen there. That's in early August, after my little vacation in San Diego for Comic-Con that I go annually to every year. I don't even know what I'm rambling on here. I've been playing a lot of some fun games. I've played some Magic the Gathering again because of the Final Fantasy set, and I'm on Arena with that. I want to buy some physical cards and maybe have some of those mono art cards, like maybe framed or something. But yeah, things are moving. Retro game zines, big Beat 'Em Up, still plugging away at the 32-bit library book that should be out this, or should be finished this fall. Everything's on pixelsandpolygons.net. Follow me on Blue Sky and read the show notes for the info on guests as usual and links. Listen to the Soundstone team of podcasts with Kirby Conversations and Flashback 64, and have a great week. We'll catch you next week with another new episode. Bye.
Listen to Flashback 64, the chronological Nintendo 64 podcast. Hosts Gooey, McKenna, and friends flashback to the 90s and early 2000s with a look at the Nintendo 64's catalog and its contemporary cultural and historical context. Starting with the console's launch titles and proceeding in release order, we discuss classics like GoldenEye, Super Mario 64, and Star Fox 64, as well as some not-so-beloved games, lesser-known titles, and everything in between. Along with game-specific deep dives, we also cover other bits of pop culture from the time, like films, music, and more. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, well, welcome to a... Oh, we're going to start. You're good with that?
Yeah, that's right.
All right, welcome everyone to a new episode of Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about video games. I have to read that text off my notes app because I feel like if I don't read it, I'm going to mess that up just saying the title of the podcast. Returning guest, friend of the show, fellow Goomba, Nick McConnell is back on the show. Hello, Nick. Welcome back to the show.
Darren, it's so good to see you. Welcome. Thank you for the warm welcome, fellow Goomba. I've always wanted to be a friend of a show. I am honored. I am very happy to be here.
What else we got? You just finished your Instruction Derby stream. We're doing this immediately after doing that. For anybody maybe who hasn't heard of that or isn't aware of that, maybe you want to pitch and tell us what Instruction Derby is and how they can find you.
Yeah, it is a weekly show that I do Wednesdays at noon Pacific, where I take a look at video game manuals from the olden days, new ones if they're available, and just sort of read through them, put them up on screen, look at them, ogle, you know, at the art, marvel at the creativity, and just sort of have fun. It's casual, it's low key, and I do it once a week over at twitch.tv/Nick McConnell. It's a lot of fun. Just got out of it right now, so we'll see where my energy levels are at after a little bit.
Yeah. Well, thanks. The streams are always fun. Like, it's always odd games of, you know, all eras and styles and genres and everything. So, super fun. And you got the name because Destruction Derby is one of your favorite video games of all time. Is this the truth?
You know what actually happened? So it used to be called video game manual reading time or something like that, which, as you can tell, really rolls off the tongue, and is an incredible. I'm a natural at the naming, right? So I was like, oh, classic. But then I read the manual for Instruction Derby on the PlayStation.
Did I say Instruction Derby?
One day there will be a video game about the show, and it'll be that will do that. Yes, Destruction Derby, and the manual had so much going on in it, and I was just blown away by everything that I was reading that it just stuck. I turned around, I was like, oh, it's Instruction Derby. So I took it, not because it's my favorite game, although it is the first or second PlayStation game I ever got. It's because it's the first manual I remember reading and being truly surprised by. So give that one a read. Destruction Derby. Fantastic.
That's fun. Yeah, that's by Reflections. They did Driver as well. They were a really big time PlayStation, original PlayStation developer for sure. They put some gems out. All car based, but real good gems.
So good.
Let's jump into it. Let's do some this or that before we get into our icebreaker. Let's throw some random ones at you here. Let's see. Cartridge or CD?
Cartridge.
Okay.
No follow-ups. Cartridge. Just cartridge.
Yeah, just cartridge. Official U.S. PlayStation Magazine or PSM PlayStation Magazine?
Ooh.
Do you remember those two?
Ooh, boy. I'm going to go with...
OPM had the Ziff Davis crew, but PSM was 100% independent and unauthorized.
I think I'm going to go with Ziff Davis. I think you gun to my head, Ziff Davis.
Mario or Luigi?
Luigi.
Luigi, okay.
Luigi.
And last one, let's see, first person or third person?
Oh, boy. Can I ask a follow-up question?
I don't think that's how this works. okay, but then. Sure. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, how about this? I'm going to give my initial answer, first person. First person is the initial answer. The second question is, does the game have cover? If the game has cover, if we're thinking about win back, then it's going to be third person. So let's just go with first person, because I prefer GoldenEye to win back. That's why we're going that way.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, cover systems, they don't really work in first person. I guess they do, but
your view is obscured when you do take cover, and you have to, like, you know, lean out and everything in order to see. I forgot it's an audio podcast, but I like leaned away from my mic to demonstrate that I was leaning outside the wall. But Winback is a good call. I love Winback.
I do like Winback. It's hard when it's up against Goldeneye. That's all. No shade to Winback. When I make my first person decision, no shade to Winback. It's just it's up against Goldeneye. It's a tough one.
I had this weird emotional connection to Winback. Like my best friend and I, like in that Nintendo 64 PlayStation era, like he had the 64. I had gotten rid of my 64 and gotten a PlayStation, but we played a lot of Winback and played a lot of the multiplayer and everything. And not long after that game came out, I moved from where I was living to Southern California. And so like, I moved away from my best friend and everything. So it was like, you know, like bum times and all that stuff, you know, like having to start a new school and everything. Mm-hmm. Like he was like my video game guy as well. Like he played and did everything. And so I was like kind of alone. Mm-hmm. And then that next generation came out and they just randomly ported that re-released Winback for the PS2. And it was like up-resed and everything. And I was like, why? Like, where is this coming from? Like, of course I'll play this. And I remember just playing through and just like feeling like, yeah, you know, just like the good old days. It was just like, it was that instant, like, first hit of nostalgia for me of just like remembering the good old times. But I was still like, you know, like an early teenager and everything. But it was just so odd. That's why cool. I love Winback, just because that weird association with my friend and everything. Still friends with him to this day. We still talk and do stuff. He's been a guest on the show as well. So,
oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. That's nice. You know, like that kind of association is, I genuinely think, maybe half at least of why I love video games, right? For you, it's Winback in that situation and sort of, you know, the powerful memories and bond with your friend. And so much of my growing up with video games was, you know, around that kind of communal experience. They're powerful things, man. That's the real deal.
Well, then I'll pivot. I was going to ask you a different icebreaker, but maybe I'll ask you the same kind of question. What is a weird, like, outside association you have with a video game? Like, is there a video game that reminds you of a certain time or place or moment, you know, that does kind of like scratch that itch for you?
Yeah, there's so many. I realize that I have this, I will always remember many different places I go. Like there's so many places where I'm like, oh, I remember this because of this game. And it's constant. The one that I go back and forth between two of them. The primary one for me is Captain Commando, the arcade game. The Capcom, you know, beat 'em up belt scroller, because they had that machine in a hotel that we stayed at on the Big Island of Hawaii when I was a kid. I never saw that machine anywhere else. I've still to this day never seen another one of those machines except for in that place. And so in my mind, it is so inextricably linked to Hawaii, but more so the smell of that little arcade room, the combination of the chlorine from the nearby pool and the air conditioning and the sort of like light mildewiness from the moisture. That game, anytime I see it, it's in one of the Capcom collections. Anytime I see it, no matter where I see it, I feel like I'm transported right back to that family trip to Hawaii. So that's probably the strangest one that I truly cannot separate from that time and place.
That's cool. Yeah, Captain Commando. That takes place in a futuristic metro city.
That's
so
right.
There's a strange tie to Final Fight, the game I legally love too much. That's it then. We did the icebreakers, we did the this or that, we're warmed up. This is an episode I've been wanting to do for a while. I've not had anticipation for recording an episode at all, ever, until this one here now, and a child's entering the room to interrupt, even though they have the explicit instructions from their father that he's recording.
No, they're here to join. They're here to take part in the take.
No, she doesn't care about video games. She plays Roblox, and that's it. But yeah, that's the question though, is our hot take episode. So what is a hot take opinion you have that you know goes against the popular consensus? And you shared something, you know, in a private, you know, private channel, you know, where so words are safe. But we asked, or we talked about it, and we asked, like, you know, would you want to talk about that more on the show? So what is that hot take you have that goes against the popular consensus there?
So my hot take, this is where I get excommunicated from all sorts of polite society and become a pariah. But that's it. You know what? I'm going to stand for what I believe in. My hot take is that I don't think that there should be patches for video games. That's my belief. I think game should come out and that's the game you get. And you have to learn to love and live within the weird textures of this game. That's my hot take. I don't think that there should be patches anymore.
And you really truly feel that way. Have you never benefited from a patch or an update or a fix to a game, or is it just the concept that games may need that is also like bothersome?
It's kind of an academic thing, right, for me. Like listen, there are so many Nintendo 64. Let's take the Nintendo 64 as an example. There are so many games on there that could probably do with a few performance boosts, right? And a few tweaks here or there, like an upgrade to the map system, maybe, you know, those sorts of things. Jet Force Gemini is, I think, the game I'm explicitly thinking about right now. It's a game that I love, but could probably use some quality of life improvements through patches. There are a million good reasons for patches that are absolutely valid, but there's something. And so I'm not saying that if I were king, I would actually go in and make it illegal to have patches. I'm just saying that I really like how do I put this? I like the idea of approaching a game in its final form, warts and all, strange textures, quirks, unevenness, all that sort of stuff, and having to take the game on those merits is something that I find absolutely fascinating. So I think about a lot of the games, and I do talk about Jet Force Gemini. One of the reasons I love Jet Force Gemini is because it is maybe a more singular experience than it is a constantly enjoyable one. I think it's a way more lasting love I have for that game, because in order to enjoy it, I sort of have to get into the grooves that the game has on its surface. And I really like that sort of seeping into the weirdness. So that's what I think. I think when you can actually go back in and make updates and changes and all that kind of stuff, there's a million good reasons to do it. And from a business standpoint, for all the other players in the world, it's probably the right thing to do. But for me, give me a game that's messed up over something that's glossy and fully realized any day of the week.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. It's like you know, you're committing to the stroke. If you're an artist, it's like, you know, painting, you know, permanently and kind of living with what's on the canvas and everything. You can't necessarily erase and undo and all that stuff. So having that finished piece, you know, it may not be exactly how you wanted it to be, but this is where it is, and then people will be able to enjoy it within those same parameters. And there is like a little bit of magic to that, you know, because I mean, some games, like their flaws or their, you know, broken or busted mechanics or something that happened, you know, that was overlooked, then becomes some like ridiculous thing that makes it like lasting and memorable and all that stuff. I mean, I'm pretty sure this is true, but like in Street Fighter 2, like the ability to do like combos and things like that was like a problem. That was an error within them like developing the game. And like, yes, that was during development that they like realized, they leaned into it like no, this is making this more entertaining, we're going to keep it like this and everything. But you know, theoretically, what if they like squashed that and kind of released it and then like as is, and then we wouldn't have the same magic, and we wouldn't, like, you know, they saw that as a warts and all type of thing that made it better. Mm-hmm. So there are sometimes that's made games like, you know, more memorable for that. So like it is, I guess it is in that regard. But like for me, if I was making a game, if I was the developer, I would love the ability to I would never be able to hit that button to submit send like those final files. I'd be like, nope, you know what? Maybe let's push this back 6 months. Let me go ahead and re-review this. Let me go ahead and replay this again. Let me make sure this is all good, because if it's sent and gone and that's all I get, like, I want to make sure I get this right. So like in a perfect world, yeah, I wish developers had a chance to like submit what they really wanted to submit, be done with it, and be confident in that, not necessarily beholden to like, you know, investors and that the financial side of things. It's probably forcing them to put out games much sooner than they're intended, because they know they have that undo button of like, cool, I'll throw a 34 megabyte patch at this that recodes something like this and fixes this texture and whatever may be. I mean, it's such an interesting thought that, you know, I don't necessarily agree or disagree per se, but it is wild to think about.
It's a weird thing. When I was sort of, you know, like somewhat tongue-in-cheekly like really going to bat for this in the group chat, you know, I was thinking a lot about it actually, and there's you know, like, you want, I'm not coming at it from the mindset of, you know, there's a certain type of retro gamer, I guess, let's just say, that gets real salty about the idea of updates, in the sense that like, oh, in my day you just plug the game in and it just worked and did it, all that kind of stuff, and that ignores just how messed up some of those games were, because the developers were under insane, you know, time crunch or these things, and it's a bad working environment, and it oftentimes did lead to games that were just not good, right? Like I'm not saying that like games were better back then because of it. But you know, there is something to the ability to just say, all right, this is the one, it's out the door, we're moving on to the next thing. And then over the years, you know, people can come and approach those games on their own terms as they were originally released. There's stories around them that can be told. You know, I work in game development, and I'm not a developer. That's another discourse. But I'm in game development, but I'm not a programmer, right? Or I'm not an artist or one of those. So I would probably feel very differently if I were. So I don't want anyone to feel like I'm disrespecting the need to go in and, you know, kind of keep working on stuff and really put out what they want to put out. My whole thing is just, you know, one of the reasons I love Mario 64 is because, as groundbreaking a game as it was and is, and how smooth some of it is, parts of it are real janky, and just like, they still just had to ship the thing and that was going to be it, right? So even in these incredible games, incredibly meaningful, powerful gaming experiences, there's still going to be rough edges and all that that may have been sanded away through updates. And even if those updates would have made the game better, probably, right? Like balances, all that kind of stuff, get rid of some bugs, you wouldn't necessarily have the same game that you do now. And that's what I really cherish. I just really cherish the rough edges. And I think maybe to some degree, this also gets down to why I tend to prefer smaller scale games from smaller teams with smaller budgets, is that I just like the, when you can really feel, again, I keep saying the word texture, but sort of feel the textures of the paintbrushes, you know, from those people, all the, and nothing has really been sanded away. It can be a little bit chunky, maybe a little bit clunky, maybe a little bit unfriendly. But I don't know, that requires you to, engage with the game in a different way. And I just love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the having a game be permanent as it is, and not like messed with and not tweaked and refined and everything, that also allows like, you know, like speed running and that whole community and all that stuff, you know, like they can, like if you continuously like patch and polish and updated things, and that happens with some modern games where it's like, oh, I'm speed running this game, but it's on version 1.4. And so they have to keep this specific patched version because their entire strategies revolve around having certain mechanics or things that are not like modified or broken that prevents them from doing what they're trying to do. Or they have to relearn and do it all over again. Like Super Mario 64, like speedrunners know exactly what they get, warts and all, with that. Like, they know that it's not going to be changed or modified, and then you discover like some really weird like game breaking things that you're pushed to find because you're like, like, hey, if I'm going to shave off mm-hmm. time here, like, where could that come from? Like, what can that do? And then they define that, like, weird long jump mechanic where you can infinitely, like, tap it and spot and throw yourself up the stairs and everything, and it's not getting patched out, and now suddenly everybody's learning this new thing. And, mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that's the speedrunning community isn't necessarily the hugest or, like, largest reason to, like, you know, have games be final, but, like, there's benefits, you know, to that, and there's an equity that happens there within that same community. It's interesting though, because I'm my brand of comedy. People maybe don't think I'm the funniest person in the world, but I'm a quantity, not a quality person. Like, I'll use the same bits. I'll just throw, as long as I get a joke every now and then or a laugh every now and then, like, I'm good. But I will throw it as many as I can. I feel like a developer in, you know, the earlier days before they had the ability to patch things, like, if you kind of ship it, you're done with it. If you want to do something better, or you mm-hmm. found something within the engine or within, like, your tool set that you could have done better, like, that just kind of pushes you to, like, make another game or make a sequel or do something further with it. So now you have a quantity of releases that you're refining what you're doing, rather than sitting there for 10 years making mm-hmm. one thing, you know, that you're constantly, like, modifying and tweaking and trying to rebalance and retool and, like, you know, refine down to the best thing, or patch over and over again over years and everything too. So, like, the idea of shipping it, you know, and it being done, and, you know, even if it's, you know, not your best, like, you can still be proud of and improve upon that with that next thing that you do. That's also, like, a great thing and a good mindset to have and everything with it. So, yeah, I mean, just the way the technology has evolved that has allowed us to even do something like this, but it's an interesting dynamic.
Totally. And, you know, and it's, and again, I'm saying this as all, like, just as a player, right? Like, so again, you know, my take is a bit tongue in cheek here, right? You know, in terms of this, I think, you know, there's a big difference too, in terms of the economy of game development back in the, we'll just call them the olden days, versus now, right? You know, I think developers probably don't have the, even if they want to, right? There's a lot less flexibility with the financials and the market and everything right now, right? Like, I think, you know, making a game and then making sure that it's got as wide a reach as possible and all that is of the utmost priority right now. But I do, yeah, I do, like, I think about the Cruisin' series on the Nintendo 64 as maybe kind of an example of, I keep coming back to the Nintendo 64 because the more I think about it, the Nintendo 64 is really the ultimate of this, where it's like all these games are janky in some capacity.
Yeah. And could some use of these some, games could be good with some, of these, some quality. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So there's promise. And some of the joy is looking for that stuff, right? But, you know, you look at the original Cruisin' USA, and that thing is a mess. I love Cruisin' USA, especially the arcade game is fantastic. The N64 one is a real mess. It's not optimized, you know, it's missing stuff, it's all that. And then they came back with Cruisin' World, and Cruisin' World is a much more finely tuned game, right? And then there's Cruisin' Exotica, and they've spiffed it up further, and they've taken the lessons from the first two games, even just on a technical level, and applied them to this. And again, maybe that's not the most sustainable way to do video games now, right? It might not even be possible now. But that is something that I love watching. And again, just as a player, just as an end user, I find it so fascinating. So it's a neat thing to be able to do. You think movies too, right? Movies are kind of an example of this. You put out a movie, and there's lots of movies with promise that don't quite get there, but they had to finish it. And they had to put it out, and you then get the movie that you get. And I guess with Cats, didn't they make some updates to the graphics in Cats after it came out?
Yeah, they did something like that. Yeah. Like,
but that's pretty rare. And I think I just think it's kind of neat that sometimes a movie's not going to hit its full potential for X, Y, and Z reason. And you get to watch it and learn why that's the case. There's obviously also so much you can learn from games that are updated and are patched and all these things. Again, I'm being a little bit glib, but I just, it's just so fascinating to take each of those games on their own terms as a finished thing, and as part of the context into which they were released. So yeah, that's rad. I love it.
Well, that's the question. That's the episode. That's the take. So, I mean, if you have thoughts or anything, leave a comment, leave a review, and tell us why Nick is insane, or tell us why you fully agree and support Nick. Yeah, let us know.
Yeah, only the last one. Don't bother if you guys have a take that says you don't agree with what I'm saying. Don't worry about it. Don't bother. But if you like what I said, I would love to hear. There are dozens of us, I'm sure, who agree. So please let me know. We'll become stronger together.
I initially leaned to if I was leaning anyway, it was leaning into supporting, you know, I would encourage patches and things like that to happen. But talking about the cruising stuff specifically, as a kid and as a game player, as somebody growing up, I would rather have more games and more options and things available to me. And even if there were refinements and all to it, still it's gonna be able to play that sequel later, rather than would I rather have waited 5 years to play one definitive cruising game on the Nintendo 64, or would I rather have grown and evolved and changed with the series as it was growing and evolving and changing, you know, over three different games on the platform? You know, I would take that 10 times out of 10, just because give me more variety, give me more opportunity, give me more games to play, because I was probably wanting to play more games than I had time with, sure, but I wanted to play more games rather than just a one-off and be done, and that's it.
Well, and you know, and actually, and I'm sorry to, and just another quick thought on that too is with this is outside of any developer's control. This is you know, this is outside of any really company's control too, I think, to some degree. The other thing with, you know, games getting patches over time is that you will usually wind up with a game that much more closely resembles the developer's intention, right? If you have the ability to make changes and tighten things up and all that. And there are so many games where I've, you know, been playing, and there have been a number of games where I've played, paused, waited for there to be an update or something, and then I come back in, okay, cool, here we go. Now it's fixed this thing. All of that's fantastic, but the way the impermanence of server space and needing to grab downloads and needing to grab those patches, you know, it's becoming a lot harder to ever really have that final version forever, because, you know, it lives on a server somewhere and you can't download it and write it to your disk on the PlayStation 5. It can live on your hard drive for a little bit, but that's, you know, that's not a thing. And so that's another aspect of it, is just sort of the version that you get may change over time. And then if you ever want to go back to it and really study it, and this is where people are doing amazing work around game preservation, obviously. But at a person buying a game on the internet level, it's hard to go back and really study and learn from those games once patches start getting introduced, because it's going to be hard for you to get the full experience within the context that it existed when it was out and getting patched, versus going and being Capcom came out with 300 Street Fighter 2s on the Super Nintendo. I can go through each of them and see the updates and changes as I go.
Yeah, it's a good point. Cool. Well, this is still one. Obviously, you can think more and talk more about that. But good question, or good hot take, I think, for sure. That led for some good dialogue. It did not fail, and it lived up to its expectations I had for it. So thank you, Nick, for bringing the question to the show, and letting us bring it out of the safety and secrecy of the Goomba chat and everything out to the public. So thank you.
If I get any pushback about this on Blue Sky, I'm going to stand really firm publicly, and then I'm going to go to the DMs and apologize directly to the people who are complaining, because I don't want people to be mad at me.
I mean, you've said some other hot takes. The Metroid take on
that the only good
only one
yeah that the only actually good Metroid game is Metroid Dread. Yeah, that's true. That is actually true. But that's just a scientific fact. That's a little different.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. All right. Well, Nick, thank you so much. I'll have links to the Instruction Derby and your Blue Sky handle and all that stuff in the show notes below.
Thank you.
But anything you want to plug or share before we end the episode?
No, I think I'm good. If folks are around and watch the show, it's not really a hot take factory, so it's kind of meant to be a nice place to hang. Feel free to come by again Wednesdays at noon. Otherwise, that's it. Thanks so much for having me, man. I appreciate it. And thanks for providing the space for me to be toxic.
Yeah, all good. I like to think my show also is not toxic at all, but I do have this hot take question that I allow people to answer. And I think everybody who has answered it, though, has done it, you know, in a really positive way. You know, it's a thought, it's an opinion, it's not destructive or anything like that at all. So I appreciate it. And yeah, thank you. We'll definitely have you on a future episode for sure. But thank you, Nick.
Thank you.
Do you find yourself playing older games and wishing that there were new discussions about those games? Enter Tales from the Backlog. Hi, I'm Dave Jackson, and on each episode, I'm joined by a guest to break down those games that may be stuck in your ever-expanding backlog. Each episode looks at one game in depth, focusing on mechanics, story, music, and other aspects with no spoilers until a clearly marked spoiler wall in the middle. If you've played the game, go ahead and climb that spoiler wall and enjoy in-depth story discussions, and if not, jump out when we warn you and maybe go play that game for yourself. We have over 100 episodes in the feed, everything from Disco Elysium to Tunic to discussion episodes about how to get into horror games, and if games actually need to be fun, or if they have more to offer. I guarantee that there's something in there for everybody. Once again, that's Tales from the Backlog, available wherever your podcasts are found.